This is your Anime D-Gens Weekly Rundown 59. Now let's get it. Welcome back, everybody. It's Sebastian here, your boy Bass with Tyler. Once again, we are missing Dan. He's going to come back eventually, I promise. I've been saying this for maybe 3 weeks now. I don't know anymore. But Tyler, how are you doing this evening?
Well, I'm pretty sure he's going to be back on a D-Gen episode. So we almost got him. We almost got him. So
yeah, we're going to have to fly to Vegas and get him out of there.
It's going to be me and Bass was talking. It's going to be like the Hangover all over again, bro. We're going to turn that into an anime just with me and Bass as one of the main characters. So
yeah, we're going to pull them out like SEAL Team 6 or some shit like that. We'll see what happens. Maybe we have to coax them out with some One Piece manga. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, but I'm doing pretty good. Just chilling tonight. It was actually like a really warm and beautiful weekend, and then all of a sudden overnight it turned into 30 degrees. Oh, and I'm just like, damn, I'm gonna be sick. So
that's fucked. Yeah, that's usually what happens to me too. Yeah, it was beautiful here. It was like mid-70s, sunny, and then today was really overcast, but at least the weekend was sunny, man. We went up to the called the Raptor Center, like our Raptor Rehabilitation Center. It's just like a bunch of birds of prey. It's pretty dope. Okay. And they have them like in cages, but like in the woods because they're rehabilitating them.
Is it?
It's pretty dope.
Whoa. So like eagles and shit?
Yeah, like eagles, owls, vultures, like all kind of stuff that's like native to different parts of North America.
I remember you sending me a picture. I was like, what is this man doing? Is he just walking around in the forest or some shit?
Yeah, I need to post some of that stuff on Twitter. I got some pretty cool pictures. Went out there with my camera and just kind of hung out for a couple hours. It was dope.
Hell yeah.
I like doing shit like that. It's like a good zoo instead of like just having imprisoned animals and like rehabilitating them.
I went to like a bird park down in, what is it, Alabama or something, but, It was actually really pretty. It was a really good time just chilling, walking around, looking at like birds and shit. So,
yes. And this was a good time to go because there's not any bugs yet. It hasn't been consistently warm enough for bugs yet. So it was pretty nice.
Ain't got the skeeters out there after you.
Exactly. Cause last time I went, yeah, there was a bunch of bugs and it was terrible. But I went back anyway. So that's how much I like it. But guys, the best way to support us, rate the podcast, tell your friends, you guys know what's up, the whole song and dance. If you want to hear topics or have questions about the latest episodes of any of the rundown shows, hit us up in the Discord, hit us up on Threads, hit us up on Twitter. Y'all know where to find us, so shout out. So today's episode, today's rundown, guys, 4 shows, same as always. Undead Unluck, episode 23. Frieren the Slayer, episode 27. Mashal, Magic, and Muscles, y'all know what it is. Season 2, episode 10. And then lastly, One Piece, episode 1097. We are forever, ever getting close to that 1100 mark. And I don't know what it is about it. It's that nice, even number for me. But 1100, absolutely nuts. We're not even that close to being done. Very excited.
I'm hoping it's a pretty good episode of One Piece as well. So
I hope so. I really do. Tyler, you ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's get it started.
Excellent. So guys, first we have Undead Unluck episode 23 titled A Story I Won't See Coming. Very exciting episode, by the way.
Yeah.
So we finally got some clarity on who Ano Un is or Un is, but there's a lot of questions to be answered. At least I had a ton. But alongside this, Under pulls up to Ano's house ready to kill, really. Very aggressive. I don't really know what their goals are for coming over there, but hey, it is what it is. So the first thing we see in this episode is kind of confirming that Foucault entering the book didn't actually alter Andy's life in the real world. Just that Andy is now getting to live a new version of his past where he met Foucault a long, long time ago. So it's kind of just more affecting who he is right now instead of what actually happened in the real world. Because we were a little confused on that last time, right?
Yeah, we was kind of wondering if that's the reason why he was there at the park and all that stuff, which I still don't really quite understand that. If that didn't actually happen in real life, then why was he there at the park that day still? So,
yeah, I have no idea. Maybe just chance, you know?
Just chilling, drinking his, I don't even remember what he's drinking, milkshake or some shit. So,
dude was vibing, bro. Dude was just vibing. But what a stroke of luck it was for the entire world, really. But we also saw that Under is now on the scene, as I said, and Anno seems to be familiar with them. And as I was writing this while I was watching it, I kind of forgot that this person could see the past and the future. So I was like, how does she know who that is? But that's what happens when you write a bunch of these guys. You kind of forget some. I can't even say small details. That's a huge one. But we did kind of learn that Unseen is part of Under and is already close up to Rip's rank. Did that kind of surprise you?
Well, it surprised me that they're kind of, copying the Union's ranking system, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big surprise for me to hear, because you think that if they wanted to, take it away from the Union and do it their own way, that they would be doing it a different way instead of doing it like the Union was doing it. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, but I think Billy just had a problem with, management, but really liked everything else about the organization.
Okay. You think Billy's, the leader over there?
I think so.
Okay.
And they were calling him boss when they did, the raid with Burn.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, but I did not see Unseen being a part of Under at all. Because they had him tied up and were, cutting him up, right?
Yeah, I thought he was dead, bro.
They made it seem that way. But, from your understanding, was it did Unseen just want to kill Foucault just to rank up? There was, no other reason?
Yeah, that's... because it seemed like they made it seem like they had orders to, just do what they want to do, determine the future or whatever. And he's like, no, I want to do this because it'll get me higher rank than you. So, which I mean, props to him. He's trying to do his thing. You know what I mean?
Trying to get that rank up. Yeah. I just thought it was a little flat, or I guess I didn't understand why Unseen would want to just go after Foucault for what seemed to be no reason other than the rank up. That's a hell of a reason to kill somebody, but I'm no villain.
I ain't no villain either, so.
Yeah, it beats me. But kind of next we see how, and I'm very, very unclear about this, about how Anno or Akira came across the G-Liner artifact. That's the pin that we've been seeing and can draw in the air and whatnot. And at that moment, Akira, they were called at the time, learned about the past and the future, along with becoming a negator at the same time, bro. So whatever the negation abilities were, it made Akira invisible. Couldn't touch anybody either. So I don't. Do you have any speculations about what negator powers that Akira got in that moment? Because I can't think of any. Unreal? I'm not real.
I was trying to think of something before this. And I couldn't really come up with anything because one of the things that really confused me was the fact that she was so, she was kind of invisible or whatever back then. I keep on saying she, but she was called a boy yeah, as Akira. So
yeah.
I guess she's a boy. I don't know. But anyways, they was invisible back then, but now they're not invisible. So I'm just like curious why. I'm assuming they got their negator abilities under control, and that was the reason why they was invisible and not invisible now. So.
But they don't even look the same.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if she or he, I think it was a he they, back then, and I
just,
think
let's just say
changed
they.
Into she now.
I just don't understand what they were trying to get across here.
I think that they tried to. I think that Anno Un has changed her appearance that way. She isn't noticed by her family or whatever.
Wait, you think Akira like changed what he looked like? So he, why would he do that though?
Because they couldn't see him. And by the time that they was able to control whatever powers that was making him invisible or whatever, like it's kind of a little too late. You know what I mean? And
shit, I'm going
they're
to see
already
my mama.
Like really deep in the manga future bullshit, right? They got addicted, bro.
okay. Little Oda syndrome. But I mean, I was thinking that at some point they had to figure out that the G-liner pen could like create things if you just draw in the air. I was thinking that maybe Akira drew something over themselves.
Made a clone, kind of, huh?
Well, not a clone, like just a body that you can see around his body. Like you just drew it over the top of himself.
I mean, either one would make sense, right? I mean, that's why he's cutting his arms off and not even blinking.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, though. Like, that's weird.
They have to tell us, though, right? They definitely have to tell us.
Next week's the finale, bro. I don't think we're going to get to find out.
I need to know this. This shit is crazy. But regardless, so going back to their past, it's dude got tired. I mean, I guess bored or really was focused and ended up running a one-shot manga, which seemed like over the course of years, by just sitting at the park bench where he ended up meeting Fuko and Andy. And ended up writing To You From Me, the manga. And came up with the pen name Anno Un, which actually means nobody knows. Nobody knows the troubles I've seen. And it was a really cool thing. And it actually became really, really famous, of course. Fuko has read it. And I guess a lot of people around the world had as well. Because it seemed like Akira's mom was on her deathbed. And then one of the nurses brought in the book. And I think she recognized the art style. That was a really cool moment, I thought.
It was. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. But still not sure if, you know, the memories are real. Akira kind of rushes off to see Andy. He's like, okay, I think Andy's going to be here at this time in Japan working on some swordsmanship. This is an easy chance for me to go see the person, right? And it was odd to me that Akira still didn't trust his memories. He's been invisible for some years. He's written To You From Me. Like, he knows about the world. He knows about being a negator. He knows he is one. Did it make sense that he still didn't trust it, though?
Well, I kind of think so, because to that point, like, they didn't really know that. If it was true or not, they just, I guess, got the feeling that it was true, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatever. And so in order to confirm that, the best way to do it is go see if, like, it's right or not. And they did. They went and seen. They seen Andy for the first time, but Andy did not see them. So.
See, I don't know if I would have just been enough me being fucking invisible for some years. I mean, like, okay, this... A lot of crazy shit happened in that moment where I touched that pen. Maybe it is true. But yeah, I understand the curiosity. It's like, because, I mean, now that I think about it, Akira hasn't met any of these people. he hasn't seen any of these events with his own eye, so he just needs a small portion to like put all of it together.
Yeah, I think that also he had a little bit of like fan syndrome too. You know, he it was kind of like he was going to see one of his favorite characters, kind of in a way. So,
like, if one of your favorite characters was like a real person,
yeah.
Like, if Gandalf the Grey was like a real person, I'd be like, yo, I'm pulling up for real.
Please sign my forehead.
Oh man. So yeah, he pulls up to like this, I can't even call it a school. It's like a small little house in the woods, I guess was a dojo. And this girl is tripping over Andy. But was Andy wrong for not giving that lady an air, bro? Like, what's up with that? He just like took the training and dipped that on her. That's crazy. That's crazy. This lady had trained you for a year. She needs an heir to, I guess, the sword dojo. I don't know what the fuck this place is. And he just dipped on her like that. It was like, you can't outlive me, so bye. That was crazy.
Hey, bro, there's plenty of other fish out there in the sea, and that fish happens to belong to Fuko, right? He can't cheat on his woman like that.
Man, he don't even know her yet.
But does he not?
No, remember? Because
he don't.
Yeah, he ain't met her yet.
Okay. Well, I think I got confused. Bro, because be Akira his loins, was like,
you know what I'm saying?
I think Akira was saying in his head, like, you don't need to do that, Andy, because you have Fuko. So I guess I got confused a little bit there.
Yeah, fucking Akira knows that. If I'm Andy, I don't know, man. I don't know, man.
Deep down in his heart, Andy knows, bro.
Okay. Andy are way too big of a savage if this was real life. Good God. But yeah, so through all of these memories and everything else, Akira / Anno, whatever we want to call them, they realize that they have a single opportunity to change the future. And that the Negators will lose fighting against God because Fuko ends up getting killed. And then Andy's not as effective in battle because he doesn't have Fuko. So they're really the only hope for humanity, the Negators. But in that little quick flashback, we also saw like Juiz dead alongside Andy with no pettiness in. I guess he's trying to turn into Victor to overcome God, which... Good luck with that shit. Do you think this is still an opportunity for that to happen in this? I guess maybe not with Andy, but do you think Juiz could still die? I think that's on the table still.
I mean, what's a good story without like one of the major good guys or like presumed good guys dying, right?
Yeah.
That would be fun. I mean, Andy and Fuko, like, After they come out that book, like, they're kind of OP now, you know?
That's true. Because, yeah, they were saying that Andy is now as strong as Victor or comparable to Victor now, which is a huge boost. And then with Fuko having that so much more control over her ability, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Next season should be.
Too bad that we probably aren't going to get to see it, though, because I feel like we ain't even going to get to see the Autumn fight. Do you think so?
No, I really don't think so. Not this season, but probably the beginning of next season.
Yeah.
This has to get a season 2. This shit is gas.
Oh, yeah. I would say probably next year, I'd assume. So.
I would think so. But yeah, Akira kind of found that small loophole where they could go meet Fuko and Andy and then somehow come up with an avatar or something like that to where they could see Akira. So we're still confused on that. So hopefully they explain that shit. But yeah, he explained it as like kind of like a loophole in the rules. So I think part of it was you can know all this, but no one can know that you know. So he ends up creating To You From Me. And tells the entire story, which I thought was really cool. That was so smart of them to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm sure other people have found that pin in the past and just not been able to come up with a way to communicate any of this. So it's a real game changer.
Yeah, it just so happens that it fell into their hands, and they was literally already an artist, right? So they kind of knew how to do their thing, and they just had the pen helping them now. So it's really, really wild.
A mangaka with a mighty pen.
Imagine Oda with that pen, bro.
He might have it right now. Shit. So going back to the present, and Andy's starting to come up out of his own book of life, is what I'm calling it now. Unseen is seen closing in on Fuko with a little switchblade and is about to slit her throat, just like Akira saw in his memory. And Andy comes back and quote unquote deadlines him. That's like the hardened blood coming out of the elbows there, which was sick. And Unseen's soul ends up being freed from his body. And he gets cut in half around the chest, which was gruesome. I think that's one of the more gruesome things we've seen. Because it's usually Andy that's breaking off body parts and things like that. But it doesn't matter because they grow back.
Yeah.
But we got Unseen here in four different pieces. And I thought it was kind of funny, bro, that the only time we've ever seen Unseen on screen is when he's getting absolutely hoed. Like, we've seen him tied up to a chair, getting bled out. He comes back. We think he's dead. And then he comes back for one episode and gets cut up into four pieces at the first sign of him trying to do some shit.
I mean, you ain't lying. I guess there's a reason why he hasn't had much, what's it called? Airtime or screen time. Because he's just going to die like this.
Why even waste the screen time?
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's fucked up. My man has just been down on his luck for a minute. But it's over now. So I guess that's a positive, maybe. And another part of the show, Fuko was about to throw up, and Andy's like, didn't I tell you not to sweat the small stuff or some bullshit like that? And this crazy ass lady ends up swallowing her own throw up, bro. It's already in your mouth. Like, just throw that shit.
Like, that, I'm not gonna lie, Bash. That almost got me. That almost made me sick. I'm like, bro, how do you not get sick off of just doing what she just did? Like, that would make me even sicker, right?
Yeah, nah, it had me fucked up. I was fucked up watching it, bro.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was like cringing. I was like, wow, why are we showing this?
Yeah, I'm getting queasy just thinking about it now. But in the end, Anno says, you know, they were successful in saving Fuko. So the Union has a chance. The Negators have a chance. But yeah, I gotta know. I'm like super stuck on what Anno is. But did you actually get to watch the post credit scene?
So oh, it was kind shit.
Of a, oh no, brother.
Oh shit.
Oh no, brother.
Tell me in short form what happens.
Okay, so you know how Under had pulled up to Anno's house. This is like the fight between those two.
Yeah.
So what ends up happening? The person that Rip is with, like the little girl, ends up taking the gun artifact away from Fuko, even though Fuko's, you know, she's trying to box. Fuko ain't a bitch anymore. She's got some cojones while she's fighting, and they kind of end up fighting to a standstill, and Fuko is like, hey, why don't we go attack Autumn together instead of y'all trying to do it on yourself, and like instead of it being like a one-on-one battle, I guess it can be a 2v1. And he's like, nah, that's not what we're here for. And Rip ends up explaining that each person in Under has their own goals. And the only time that they come together to fight is when those goals align.
That's super weird then. And is this is like the first time that they've actually done a post credit scene, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The only reason I knew it was there because I had like the bar. I was watching it on my PC, and like the bar was like way too long. That was unwatched. And I was like, that can't just be credits.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I just I didn't even think about it when it started rolling. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because when I moved my mouse on the screen, because I was going to turn it off, and I was like, wait a second, that's a lot of white bar left on that. Like, something's fishy. But yeah, it ends up coming out that Creed wants to take control of several nations. Fang wants to collect all the artifacts. Rip and Lata want Ark from Juiz. And Rip and Lata are trying to save somebody from the past by using the Ark, even though they've been told that they can't do it. It's fucking, you gotta watch it. It's actually huge for the plot, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think that Ark could revive people or Ito Tensai people. I thought it just, like, prevented you from dying or whatever in the new loop or whatever.
I'm not exactly sure about how they plan on reviving this person. Okay. But that's their plan. That's what they want to do. So
we're going to let them vibe. So
we'll see what happens.
Yes. I'm sad I missed that, 'cause it seemed like a lot happened in that little post credit scene. So
it was like 2 minutes, but yeah, a lot of info dropped.
Okay. I'll have to go check that back out, 'cause you know, they are to warn us about that shit, especially if they haven't been doing it all season. So,
you know, I'm usually the person that misses the post credits. So I assumed you had watched it. That shouldn't be assuming, because you know what that does. Makes an ass out of you and me. Yeah.
Well, at least you was the one that seen it this time. You done a way better job explaining it than I could have. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, you got to watch it, though, for sure.
Alrighty. Well, if that's it, we're going to get on to Frieren.
Let's do it.
All right. We got Frieren episode 27, An Era of Humans. And with the second first class mage test done, it is time for the test takers to prepare for the third round. And Frieren acts on her kindness, but is disappointed by the end of the episode. And we start this episode off with Fern already pissed. This time it's because Frieren has told her to replace the broken staff that Hyter gave her. And do you think that, like, Frieren was in the wrong for saying that she should get a new staff or nah?
No. I mean, like, I'm not sure if she knew how much that staff meant to her, but I don't think she's in the wrong for that at all.
It definitely made sense, right?
Yeah. Because one, like, if you don't want to get something broken, why are you taking it into battle?
Yeah.
That could be like you're walking around staff, like, not your I'm about to go fight Frieren staff. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe have two.
Well, so why not, like, if she's like that concerned about it, why not just like keep some pieces of it, maybe, you know, like the top of it or something, as mm-hmm. like a charm or something. And then get you a better, more, I guess, reinforced staff. But as we see, I mean, she's lost everything as a kid or whatever. And, that's all she's basically got of her, I guess, childhood or whatever. So, I guess Frieren doesn't really understand that right off the rip, because she's an elf. But she
doesn't get attached to things like that. I think it's more on Fern, honestly. Like, take care. Like, if that's the only thing you have left, like, take care of that shit. She does take care of it. She maintains the staff. But, like, you don't take something you care that much about in a battle. It's like if my mom or, like, my grandma had got me something, like a necklace, right? Or, like, a watch or something like that, and I played, like, football with it on.
Oh, no.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it wouldn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense. Like, why would you do that? Except for her, like, you can get all your shit smashed to bits instead of just having to fix a link or something.
Yeah, I guess one way that I can see is, like, you know, you don't have to have that stuff to, you know, play football or whatever, but she has to have it for her magic or whatever. But that still goes to say, like, she could definitely have, like, another, like, staff that she uses for, like, dangerous, trips or something like that, because you knew this was going to be dangerous, right? So
right, I feel like the hiker staff is for like in town helping people type shit.
Yeah, show you off type shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You bring it out on special occasions and shit like that. But then you have the battle staff that's probably a little bit stronger, made out of metal, and not from Hiter.
Yeah, not something you really, really care about. So.
Right. So
it definitely makes sense. But she, I guess you have to also remember she is a teenager. So
yeah, not she's very annoying.
Yeah.
I'm so over her, bro.
So I can definitely tell. Like Like, I watch a lot of Slice of Lives and stuff, you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the little thing that they're doing with Fern or whatever, it's supposed to be, like, a comedic, like, funny thing that's happening. I laugh about it. I love it. So, I love the pouty faces from Fern. But it's different because I do watch those type of things, and they do show this type of thing, like, a lot. And that is, like, a humor point, I guess. So it's it's interesting,
like,
you know,
like, why are you always in a bad mood though? Why are you making everybody like miserable all the time?
It's not everybody, it's just Stark. It's just our boy Stark. So
Fern's scared of her ass too. Don't play.
That's why she up there fixing the damn staff, bro.
exactly.
But yeah, it's definitely interesting to see, like, like your thoughts on Fern compared to mine, you know, especially after these last few weeks of them, like, replaying the pouty face joke. So
assassinating her character.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna stop.
I love it. I love seeing it. So, but yeah, after all that, well, we actually get Dinkin in Reichter's shop telling him not to get down on himself and saying that he's going to get stronger in 3 years, which is when the next mage, first grade mage comes through the test or whatever again. And we actually see Fern roll up and have Reichter put together Fern's staff again. And she kind of Well, she wasn't doing it intentionally, but she's like, well, if you can't fix it, then, you know, I guess I'll just leave. And he's like, what? What did you just say to me?
What you said to me?
You don't assume I can't fix it. I just didn't feel like doing it. So
my man's ego is so hurt right now. He did not need that.
Yeah, Dinkin, then Furin. Like, it's at that point, they're just rubbing it in his face, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he ain't had enough. He's, I can fix this staff.
And I enjoyed it. But then we move on to, like, some of the, I guess, more meaningful things of the show. And mm-hmm. We actually see Ciri with all the other test proctors discussing the fact that 12 test takers passed. I forget her name.
Since
his test, and it was basically due to the fact for Fearin being too strong. She was basically saying that if it wasn't for Fearin being there, then that many people wouldn't have passed. Hardly anybody would have passed.
I don't think anybody would have passed, period. Yeah, I don't think anybody would have passed, period.
And I kind of agree with that, you know. And, you know, she's like, I can't pass all these people because, you know, they don't deserve it, you know, riding off of Fearin like that. So did you have any thoughts on, like, her? Was she being too harsh, or, like, is she justified?
I don't think she was being too harsh, because they were saying, like, a traditional third test would just flat out kill most of the 12, probably outside of maybe Fearin and Fearin. I didn't expect Ciri to actually care about human life like that, though, especially like 10 of them. You know, she just comes off a little cold. And but at the same time, like, I guess, like, tempering myself is, like, she cares about strong people or talented people is what she says. So makes sense. But I could also see her just not giving a rat's ass.
Yeah, that was kind of surprising for me too. I was like, why why not just let them do their thing, you know, let them learn the hard way, right? But I guess she does, like you said, it's about them, about not wasting the opportunity / potential. So
true. I mean, you can't learn if you're dead.
Yeah, that's right. So, but we actually learn that without innate talent or a few hundred years of practice, it would be hard to fool demons with mana suppression. This is one of the points that gets brought up. Also, focuses on this skill has had negative effects on Furin, leaving her relatively unskilled for her age as an elf. We see her we see her in an OP light all this time, but through Ciri's eyes, she's actually not anywhere close to what Ciri would expect her to be.
Crazy.
Yeah.
When she said this and she was saying all this, the first piece I had to break down in my mind was okay, it takes a few hundred years of practice to fool a demon with mono suppression, and Fern isn't even 15. So that kind of tells you how skilled she is, and I guess how talented she is. She's really a rare talent. But then also learning that Frieren is kind of a pushover for her age is kind of nuts. Because like you said, we've always seen that she's stronger than everything and everybody else. But that's only because she's 1,500 plus years old. Not because she's actually a good mage.
Yeah.
Well, I should say skilled mage. She's a good mage. She's not a skilled mage. Which is crazy, right?
Yeah, and it's crazy that someone of Fern's caliber actually was able to match up with Frieren, right? That's just a match made in heaven, basically. I think, anyways.
It is. Because regardless, so you have somebody that is very smart, is talented. Furin is talented. She just doesn't care about fighting. She just wants to find little rinky dink spells to do because she likes doing little rinky dink spells. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's kind of like me. I feel like it's kind of like me with golf. Only reason I'm good at golf now is because I've been playing my whole life. I don't really give a shit. I really don't care that much. Master's out there
swinging, bro. He don't care where it goes. He just points in the right direction and lets it roll.
I'm out there vibing. Unless it's for money. My friends know, do not bet me in money anything. I get so serious, bro.
Yeah. So it was definitely interesting to see all this brought up because, you know, we didn't really know. I guess last episode kind of skill checked Fern, and this episode kind of skill checks Furin to some extent. Which is pretty interesting. And then we actually learned that her series apprentice, or whatever you want to call it, learning. She was kind of disappointed in him. And Ciri also said that he might be able to fight Furin equally. What'd you think about all that?
Ciri just kind of asked the question, you'll probably never get the chance to fight Furin, you know, even if you, it was kind of weird how she asked the question. I was really unclear about what she's saying. He wouldn't do it because he's timid or he can't actually beat her. You know what I'm saying? I really didn't understand.
Yeah. I'm trying to think back and remember what I was thinking during that time. I think it was something he aspired to be on that level, I guess, but if he can't, he was disappointed in her, him, because he still wasn't able to tell that she was suppressing her mana, right? That's why he was disappointed in him, right?
Yeah, it seemed like that was a reason that she was disappointed in him. And then it was also because of his attitude.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't, like, being a mage, it seems like you have to think pretty greatly of yourself. Or, yeah. Or be, you know, you got to be able to imagine yourself doing anything you want, because that's what part of magic is in this. It's imagery.
That's why Ubel's so, like, the way she is, you know?
Yeah, she's not smart, but she's, like, naturally, like, yeah, like, I got this shit. It's no issue.
Yeah,
she's
so
naturally confident.
So, with all that being said, like, I think that she was basically saying, you know, if you would have changed instead of staying the same, if you would have actually learned from me, I guess, and figured out what I was doing and stuff, you might have had the chance to be on equal terms to Frieren, right?
That kinda makes sense. I can see that.
But it's definitely, like, this whole, like, exchange was pretty interesting, especially as far as world building goes. It definitely gets you thinking. But afterwards, after all that, after she talks about not being able to tell, you know, if mana is fluctuating and stuff like that, someone that's trained under her couldn't tell if her mana is fluctuating. We actually see Ciri judging. We have people coming in, and she's like, basically, as they're walking up, she's like failing them. She's like, you failed. You're not coming. You're done. But not only is she like failing them, she's actually like giving the reasons too, which I enjoyed for most of them anyways. I think they cut the reasons off for some of them because of time probably. But she was actually giving some good reasons, I thought, so.
I mean, it was mostly because, like, they couldn't see themselves being first-class mages.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of, like, bullshit in a way. But, yeah. I don't know.
It was either scared of her, they couldn't see themselves being first-class mages, or anything of that nature, which was, you know, pretty interesting.
I thought it was fair to, like, a certain extent, but then we see Frieren get failed after Ciri asked her like what her favorite spell is. And it's the same as it's always been. It's the beautiful little field of flowers.
It's just like her sensei, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
But like, why do you think that Ciri failed Frieren?
Well, even
when
though
Frieren was strong enough to fight, when Frieren was strong enough to like mess up the whole test in the first place.
Yeah, well, see, I think, so the reason I think that Ciri failed Frieren is because Ciri was holding Frieren to her standards. So she wasn't holding her to first class mage standards, which is, you know, she obviously would have got it easily. She's got it. Right. She's had it in the past several times, whatever. But she was actually holding her to Ciri standards, the elf,
elf standards.
We already know that Ciri thinks poorly of her for, I guess, trying to do the smaller things and learning or loving the unique spells, kind of like Flame did, because that was one of the things that she didn't like about Flame either, her last apprentice. And I really do think that she was hoping that Frieren would have went down a different path than Flame, and she would actually like start to become like her, I guess. And
but that's
the fact
bullshit
that she didn't is the reason why she failed her.
But that's bullshit.
It is. It's omega bullshit.
Yeah. Like, I just thought that was so fucked up. But like, I mean, Frieren knew. She's like, she's not gonna pass me. Like, fuck this bitch.
Yeah.
And like, she was right. She was right. But like, I just thought it was so silly. Like, it's trivial. It's petty, the reason that you did that.
Oh, because
even though, like, okay, I'm not as strong as I could be, but like, I don't like fighting. I'd rather go fucking pick flowers and berries and nuts in the woods than go fight.
Yeah.
I just run around looking for different spells, which I think is a quality of its own, but Ciri's not a nice person, so.
I mean, you know, looking at it though, like, what has Ciri done? in all her time. She sat on a, she literally collected all the spells in the, or like a shit ton of spells in the world, it seems like. And she's been sitting on a throne surrounded by all these spells, I guess just watching people or something. And Furin's been out here like having a good time, like killing the Demon King, helping kill the Demon King, you know, teaching one of the greatest human mages that the world's probably ever going to see. You know, just trying to kind of do the same shit Ciri's doing, just on her level. So,
yeah, I mean, like, she's accomplished more than Ciri.
Yeah,
it looks like. And then like Ciri has like the gall to mock her and be like, oh, I can't even believe you defeated the Demon King. And she's like, yeah, I had strong allies. And she's like, oh, so you're lucky. Like, bro, what's your issue? What is your fucking problem, bro? Because if it was me, I know everybody says this, but if it was me, like, I would have had some issues in that room with her.
Yeah, I guess.
But Furin just don't give a shit. Like, she just don't care. It's nothing but a title to her, but she wouldn't have been talking crazy to me like that.
Furin, the thing is, Furin knows where she stands, you know? She knows that, who knows if she could go toe-to-toe with Ciri? I don't know. You know, we don't really know the extent of her magic or whatever. We know that she's older than Furin, and we know that she takes magic way more serious than Furin. So you would assume that, you know, Furin would get spanked, but who knows? You never know. So,
oh, Furin would get washed by Ciri.
Yeah.
Absolutely washed.
But, like, that's the thing. Like, where's she at? Why didn't she go after the Demon King? Like, if she's so high mighty, you know what I mean? If she can solo the world or whatever shit, you know? Like,
she talk about someone priorities, else. Bro. Yeah. That throne ain't going to, you know, have an ass in it by itself.
Talk about, you know, not
who's going to dust those books?
Liking someone. Like, I'm starting to get, like, aggravated at her, bro.
Yeah, so. No, she needs, I mean, there's a few aggravating characters in this story, but hey.
And I guess to kind of finish this out, we also learned that Himmel actually sought after Furin because she helped him when he was a little child. And she made her happy, or she made him happy while he was lost, by creating a field of blue flowers, right? And which turned into his favorite spell as well. So
yeah, so like it's actually has a lot of importance. Like your favorite spell doesn't have to be useful. It's like just your favorite fucking thing.
Yeah, I mean, so it changed his life, right? So,
right. Yeah. It actually changed everybody's life because that was the reason that he found Furin so they could go defeat the Demon King. So like,
yeah,
Ciri, you're asinine.
And, you know, we see like several times where Furin's talking to Fern about before she gets judged or whatever. And she reassures her, like, you know, no matter what Ciri says in there, you don't have to agree with anything she says, because regardless of whatever goes on in that room, she will pass you or whatever. And I loved that Furin done that to Fern, because without that, then Fern would have probably felt obligated to, like, maybe make different decisions in there, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the only reason Furin did that is because, like, so she would do what she wanted to do.
Yeah.
If she wanted to become her apprentice, I don't think Furin would really even care that much. I think she'd just be like, okay, see you later, bye. You know,
I guess I'm gonna continue doing what I want and spending however long I want doing what I want. So
right, like it doesn't make any a difference. She can do the same thing a few hundred years from now, and like it doesn't matter to her. But yeah, I think she just said that so Furin wouldn't feel pressed. Do whatever you want, like make your own decisions. Don't feel pressured, because that's when you make shitty decisions. And you feel like you got to make a certain decision,
And she immediately impresses Ciri by detecting that she's suppressing her mana. The thing that I said that Ciri's apprentice could never, ever figure out. He had been with her forever, and he still didn't know that Ciri was suppressing her mana.
Yeah.
But she sensed like a slight disruption or whatever, wavering in it, and was like, that's interesting. You're suppressing your mana. So
yeah, so and fun fact, learning series apprentice, that means learn in German. So they're keeping it up even for the insignificant characters. Even though it doesn't seem like he did learn.
Yeah, I thought it was really wild that Ciri actually tried to like take over Fern's apprenticeship, I guess. She's like, you know, you can have the world if you come over to me. I can teach you the real ways, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just thinking, like, she already has the world, you know? So.
Yeah, I think she just wanted to see Fern become stronger. And that was really it. Like, I think it was more selfish than actually trying to, like, build her up.
Yeah, that, and I think she finds Fern fascinating because she's a human and she's at that level already, you know, so.
Yes, a young human.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, is Fern the fucking main character now? Like, what's happening at this moment? What the fuck?
I mean, technically, she's been the main character, right? They got several main characters, but I don't think so. I think this is still Fern's story. It's just, right. You know, we're just living in Fern's world for a lot of it, so.
Got it.
But yeah, that's it for Fern this week. Pretty great episode, honestly.
It was pretty solid. The first half felt like filler, but it was pretty tight at the same time.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first half though. It's more slice of lifey, so I enjoyed that.
I enjoyed it. Yeah, this is just like Lord of the Rings. Like, it's just like you're kind of just doing whatever. Sometimes you're kind of just doing whatever.
But, Lord of the Rings.
Yes, sir. But next, guys, we have Mashal, Magic and Muscles, season 2, episode 10, episode titled Wahlberg Bygone and the Greatest Danger. So during this episode, guys, Wahlberg gets to show off some of his true strength, some big boy moves. But Innocent Zero seems to have some Batman level contingency plans. Like, we're talking Batman with a lot of prep time here, boys. It's kind of crazy. I was a little disappointed with this episode. Well, the results of it. The episode was pretty cool. But to start, Mashal opened the episode by breaking the fourth wall. Super heavy with Rio saying that Neri needs to say things before the narrator to be truly cool. Because they're like, yeah, it's taken us a long time to get over to the stadium. That was just before. That was just after the narrator said it. I thought it was pretty cool, but Mashal hasn't done the fourth wall break yet, have they? That was their first time, right?
I want to say that it's not their first time, but they don't do it often. I think they've only done it a handful of times, but I can't back that up. So you may be right, is what I'm trying to say.
Got you. Yeah, I don't remember any other time, but I was very surprised. If they've done it before, they did it, there was enough of a break for me to forget. Because it's not like Rick and Morty or something where they do it every other episode or twice an episode. Because then it becomes played out.
I feel like some of it may get lost, too, because that's the type of show that this is, you know? So.
Yes. I mean, but I also didn't remember who Cell War was, so they definitely could have done this before. Speaking of Cell War, they ended up dragging him back to the stadium where the students were, and they were about to interrogate his ass. And I thought shit was about to get gruesome, my boy. I thought it was about to get nasty. And he ends up getting protected by a force field and transferred away. And what the other Divine Visionage is saying is because that kind of reveals that one of Innocent Zero's crew is lurking around the stadium. And next came a really interesting moment where Calda apologized for not being able to help Wahlberg. Do you really think he could have helped, like any of those people could have helped Wahlberg against Innocent Zero?
I think it's one of those things where anybody but Wahlberg and probably Mash, right? Because Mash is the MC or whatever. He does what he wants, basically.
Right.
But I think it's one of those situations where if anybody else came to help, they would just kind of be in the way. So,
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
That's usually how it goes, at least in anime. You know, if I'm about to fight somebody, I want all my friends to jump them too. But that's real life. No, I'm joking. No, I don't fight. Y'all. We're very mild-mannered people over this way. But yeah, I didn't think. I was like, what is Calda really thinking he's going to do here? We got people bending space and time. And who are you?
Yeah, what are you going to do, my man?
Get the fuck out of here, dog. But moving on to the fight between Innocent Zero and Wahlberg. You know, I really thought Wahlberg, after the last episode, I thought he might cook a little bit. And it ends out he pulled a Russell Wilson.
Oh, no.
Ends up getting cooked. because Innocent Zero seems to have like a distinct advantage with the time magic versus the space magic. And why do you think he even had, like, I forget the master's name at this point. Why do you think he had him fight, Innocent Zero had Wahlberg fight him first? Do you think the point of that was?
I think it's either just to make him sentimental, or the more likely option was to see how strong he had become, or see if he's still as strong as what he used to be. Basically gauge his strength, you know?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense, because he did say during this episode, Innocent Zero did say during this episode, that, oh, you really haven't lost a step, even in your old age, even though they're probably about the same age. But yeah, like, I thought that was really interesting he did that. I thought it was maybe for a mental debuff too.
Yeah,
having to kill your master, somebody you like love, was, I'm sure that's not easy, but Wahlberg, he was straight.
Every time the master comes on this the screen or whatever, and they say their name, Adam Jobs, I'm just thinking, like, is this supposed to be like a parody to like Steve Jobs? You know, I mean, that's just what I'm thinking. I wonder about that. So
that's the only other person I know with the last name Jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah,
plus Steve and Adam, you know, that's kind of the same, right?
Steve and Adam?
Yeah, it's your basic, you know, like name, like that English name.
Okay.
Steve and Adam. So
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. I was about to say, don't pull your back reaching that far, but you saved yourself.
Oh, I had to do something with it. Like, I don't know about you, but like the past few episodes of Mashal has been like really great. You know, yes, we had like of the best fights in Mashal, and then we had like a really great episode the last few weeks. And then we come along in this episode, and I'm not even lying, bro. I thought this was so boring. Like, I was falling asleep watching it.
This episode?
Yeah. I don't know why, but I guess it's because, you know, they're supposed to be fighting or whatever, but they're not really fighting. It was like, it felt like the whole episode was talking about not like useful stuff.
Oh, okay.
Did you feel that or not? Or was I just tired or some shit?
Man, I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was pretty solid. You might have been a little tired, but I mean, regardless,
Maybe I was tired, I guess.
I thought it was pretty good, though. I really did. Okay. Cause like we got to see like some high level magic here, that we hardly ever get to see, and we got to see like the height of magic power with Wahlberg here.
Oh, I was awake during those moments. I enjoyed them.
Okay.
I was just, you know, fading in and out, you know.
Maybe you were just a little sleepy, friend.
I was like, oh, shit, things are going down right now. Okay.
Man needs to drink a coffee before he watches MASH next time. Jesus Christ. But yeah, I thought it was a really solid episode. I really enjoyed this episode overall. But yeah, with Innocent Zero, I mean, just clearly having the upper hand this entire fight, he saying that Wahlberg hasn't grown as strong as himself because he likes to protect everybody and make sure everybody likes him. And really, he's just abasing himself. He's holding himself back for the sake of others. which I think can be true. I think people do that in real life. I really do. They try not to shine. You know, have you seen somebody do that before, or think that's true in some way?
I do think it's true. I mean, you see it probably more in anime, you know, you know, especially like shonen stuff, like people kind of holding back in order to protect other people, because, you know, for one thing, like if he like really goes hard and like, I guess, trains to be the best version of himself, then, you know, maybe it warps him too, right? You never know. So maybe that does like a damage on his psyche or whatever. So
yeah, and like I thought it was really interesting. I mean, I've seen people like abase themselves in one way or another. Like even people like that I've worked with is like, dang, like if this person like wasn't trying to like just fit in, it'd be so much better. You know, I think they get a lot farther in life. Even people that I know personally, I think the same thing. But in this situation here, normally in anime, you get stronger when you're trying to protect people. It's usually how that goes.
Yeah, unless you're going to die, which, you know, I think we've kind of thought that he was going to die for the last few episodes, right?
Oh, hell yeah. So, oh, hell yeah. Because you have like Uranus and what was it, Mars or whatever it was.
Yeah. And plus, you like this is the only person kind of fighting for MASH, kinda, right? And so,
right.
Like this is MASH's, like, if Wahlberg dies, this is MASH's power up arc. This is his reason. His reason to power up. You know, so.
That makes sense. That makes perfect sense. But yeah, Wahlberg. I mean, we knew he was cooked. We knew once we looked at the mythology like 3 weeks ago, we were like, oh, like, okay, Innocent Zero is gonna kill Wahlberg. That's how this shit goes. But we didn't know that they were gonna stick to the mythology. But I think we had our finger on the pulse there, at least.
I mean, it doesn't really make sense though to like finally get to see Innocent Zero and then just kill him off in a few episodes, right? Like, he's here to stay. He's like the big bad of the Mashal world. Like, it doesn't make sense to kill him off as soon as he gets shown, right?
Yeah, it would make zero sense. But kind of moving on a little bit, as we get a flashback of Wahlberg's childhood and discover that he was kind of like a weak and frail shut-in guy with like zero confidence. He didn't want to deal with other people, didn't care about other people. And did this do like a good job of explaining why Wahlberg was the way he was as an adult, as an old man?
That's a
very good question. We also got to see Adam Jobs or whatever his name is.
Yeah, so no, I'm not really. So I can't 100% recall what exactly happens in this flashback. I think it was one of those times where I was a little bit out of it. Uh-huh. But, you know, it did surprise me that he was weak, frail as a kid, and he grew into being as strong as he was. It's almost like his mentor raised him up. Is that kind of how the flashback went?
Yeah.
That's what I would assume. And, you know, then you got him not even like using his magical powers or whatever, and he's only using the staff's powers and stuff. So maybe some of it's still kind of true today. Maybe he ain't got it like Innocent Zero has it, but he's got enough of it, you know?
Yeah, true. I mean, he's still extremely strong. And like he still has to understand how to control the staff.
Yeah.
Right. And he's picking his times to let the staff do its own thing versus him doing all the spells. So I think it's just, I think he's just, like you said, he's working with what he has.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it did a pretty good job of like explaining like who he is and like why he believes in the strong must protect the weak, because that's what was done for him. And without that, he wouldn't be there doing this. So he knows he can foster like an environment to like where weak people can be strong, come strong all over again, continue the cycle, which I thought was dope. I thought it was pretty cool. But yeah, with like that renewed vigor he gets from, you know, the flashback, typical shit, typical Shonen shit, right? And Wahlberg unleashes, quote, the epitome of magic, unquote, which is a spell called Space Thirds, Uranus Inclination. And he dude creates a realm of magic that can that kind of exists in space, to where he can cut off any magical spells that Innocent Zero can do. So he thought. So he's getting pieced up. A piece of his arm gets taken. Half of his face is aged to 1,000 years old. It's crazy. It's going crazy. And as Innocent Zero's like trying to kill him, he ends up, you know, saying that performing a spell that Wahlberg ends up loading in his wand, and it can cast on its own even with Wahlberg dying. So homeboy ends up on a suicide mission, bro. From the get-go, he knew this was going to be a suicide mission.
Which is wild, but like I said, we kind of got the vibe on this was happening, but I kind of thought that Wahlberg was like running this shit right now, you know, when he pulled out this the thirds or whatever. So did you get that feeling?
I really did think that he was just about to like blow this dude away, but then he pulled something to where like, oh yeah, if this works, I fucking die. Like, I'm gonna use all the magic within me and just one last attack.
Yeah, it seemed like he was gonna like die and take him with him, kind of deal. And that's what it seemed like to me, especially when they showed like the blinding light or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, he's really doing it right now. So
he just pulled the Majin Vegeta type shit.
Yeah. So,
but hopefully it was successful, which it was not. But like they've said it before this season, it's like magic is kind of like rock, paper, scissors. It seems like Wahlberg's magic was strong against his master's, but Innocent Zero's is strong against his.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's very, I mean, these, at least at this high level, it seems very rock, paper, scissors like. But going off from there, I thought Wahlberg was like going to get his lick back. But then I was like, everybody's seeing it. I don't think he's, I don't know about all that. But to go ahead and get to the end of the episode here, kind of MASH comes in last minute and saves Wahlberg from getting stabbed through the forehead, which is a terrible place to stab somebody that's fucked up. Closed casket type deal. But with a knee to the face, MASH comes in. And I got to ask you this. What do you think MASH is standing on in midair, bro?
Bro, I had the same question. I'm like, these guys, we've seen this whole episode. They're literally floating in the air. How did MASH get up there, for one? Like, how is he staying up there? Which, I mean, we don't get to see his legs, I guess. And we know from first season, he was able to fly or hover in the air by kicking his legs, kind of like a hummingbird type deal. So you think he's doing that shit or no?
I was thinking maybe, but I they didn't show it to us on purpose. So I'm hoping it's something different this time.
Yeah. I just don't know what it would be. That was a really cool scene, I think. Mm-hmm. Before I started thinking about all that stuff, because he come up and he kind of hit back with the, you remember what I told you when you asked me what I was going to do if I faced a strong opponent that I could not beat or that was way more powerful for me or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I told you I knocked the stuffing out of him. I'm like, bro, this was so cool.
Until you said that shit. You had to ruin it,
bro.
Yeah. Like, be quiet. But they could have also been trying to, like, preserve the coolness somewhat with not showing him kicking the air while all this is going down, which makes sense. But we'll see. We'll see next episode.
Yeah. We got two more episodes of MASH or so. We're going to see what's going on. We're going to see if our man Wahlberg lives to tell the tale. So, but next, we actually got One Piece 1097, The Will of O'Hara, The Inherited Research. And Shaka continues to take us down memory lane and ends up telling us about what happened in the wake of the O'Hara Buster Call. Afterwards, we get to hear about Vegapunk's power and learn about his clones. And basically, we start this episode off 22 years prior to the current day in O'Hara, several months after the Buster Call. We see the giants, including Dory and Brogy, grabbing the books out of O'Hara's lakes. Turns out, Saul is actually alive still, and is their captain. And for the folks that don't know Saul, that is the person who basically carried Robin out to safety, kind of.
Back from O'Hara, with the funny laugh and the red beard. Yeah, I was happy to see that homeboy was still kicking. Great show. Yeah.
Because it looked like he was getting worked by the Buster Call at that time after he let Robin go. So, but yeah, it was pretty surprising that the books were still kind of intact. It looked like for the most part, like,
yeah, because like what is a One Piece paper made out of, bro?
not trees, bro. I don't guess.
Yeah, there's no fucking way. Because like, and then like they knew it was gonna work because they were like throwing the books in the water. And like, if you throw a book in the water in real life, if it's in there for more than like a couple seconds or really even minutes, it's trash. Like the ink is all over the place. The pages are falling apart. But they let that shit in there for months and they still had good books. Big different.
Maybe somebody got the book fruit or some shit and they're able to like make books that don't get damaged like that. So.
True.
I'm just throwing out ideas real fast. So
yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is what it is.
And as Dragon and Vegapunk talk, it's clear that Dragon isn't an enemy of Vegapunk, right? He's only after like the Celestial Dragons.
Not an enemy of like Vegapunk, but like I think in that moment Dragon was like mad at the Navy for what they'd done because he knew Clover, which is, I mean, that's fucking fair. Like they just dropped his friend. But he didn't want, I guess Vegapunk didn't want him to get mad at the Navy because like he's saying, even people inside of the Navy agree with what you think about the world. Stay focused on, I think he was saying, stay focused on like that, the higher level people instead of like the dogs. Of those people,
because that's what his problems with. He's got problems with like the higher ups that's making these decisions. Not the pawns, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I enjoyed Dragon and Vegapunk's talk because it actually gives us some backstory, like some good history lessons about, I guess, their relationship, which is pretty neat. So
it is. It was really cool to see. They're kind of like putting the dots all together. Luffy's meeting somebody that's friends with his dad. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And in the aftermath of O'Hara, Dragon actually decided that it was time to fight back, even though he doesn't really like war. So what's your thoughts on like, I guess, older, like, or younger Dragon, I should say?
I think older Dragon would, I think younger Dragon would be proud of older Dragon. But I could see why you would want to be a peace loving person until like something happens that is so wrong that you have to like take up arms, that you have to create an army because like you just can't let this shit slide anymore. And like the fact that you, I think there comes like a responsibility. If you can do something about a situation, you should do something about a situation, you know? So, and he, I think he saw himself as that and it was like, all right, bro, like
time to roll up on these motherfuckers. We're gonna start a war.
And it's also kind of like interesting. Like, I think this makes sense because we know that Dragon like isn't like very aggressive, and maybe this is why. It's because he actually doesn't like to do what he's out there doing, right? So maybe he's more softer, I guess, instead of aggressive.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe he could just like be waiting on the right time.
True. Okay, holding his cards kind of deal.
Yeah, it's like he might have to just be like, all right, like I'm almost as strong as I'm gonna get, but I gotta wait for the right moment.
So with that being said, do you think that all this information, like the phone call with Dragon and this kind of backstory with Dragon and Vegapunk, do you think that we're going to get to see Dragon roll up soon or nah?
That's a great fucking question. During this arc, maybe. Maybe during this arc.
Because we know CP...
Whatever.
Aegis is coming to kill Vegapunk. So does he like come save his like friend, right?
He might because that's the only other person out there searching and that knows the truth, other than like I guess the giants on Elbaf. So he might be willing to protect Vegapunk.
Because think of it this way, like, so other than like the Elbaf or whatever, where all the books are, who else has like all the knowledge of what O'Hara had, plus all the knowledge that he's learned from the Navy and all that stuff? Who all has that? Like, it would be a great disadvantage for him if he let someone like that die to the government that he's trying to fight against, right?
Right. Yeah. Like he kind of, I mean, not just from being friends and having common end goals, it's like, but yeah, you would actually need that person. Because he's literally a library of knowledge, a walking library. Like, he can memorize anything. And then like he's probably, we don't know how many of the books we read. We saw that in this episode too, right? Is where like he went to Elbaf and went and saw Saul and like read the books. But if he read all of them, you got to keep the guy. Like, he has to stay alive. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I guarantee you read all of them. There ain't no way he didn't. So.
True. But yeah, it would make sense. It's like, yeah, I need to defend this person because in case those books gets burned, like, he's the guy. Like, he knows all this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just kind of curious of what you thought. I think we're going to get to see him. I don't know when, but I think he does show up. It's going to be interesting to see if we're actually right. So
that would be freaking awesome. I'm here for it.
Because, I mean, we've only seen him a handful of times, so, and he obviously kind of knows what's going on because he just was on the phone with Shaka, so, yeah.
True.
But even after revealing that he is carrying on the will of O'Hara by studying, Vegapunk Shaka says that he still cannot release the Straw Hats. So, why do you think he would still need to keep them prisoners as he's, like, after he told him all this?
I don't know, man. I really don't understand. I'm thinking maybe it's possible that Vegapunk knows Cypherpole Aegis is coming. He needs somebody to defend him, maybe. Or he has a lot more to show them that they need to know before they leave.
Yeah, maybe he just wants to be quick about it and try to give them all the knowledge that he's got, and he knows that the best way to do it is like force them to follow along, right? Instead of, because right now, you look through the eyes of the Straw Hats, right? Like, this man or these people literally tried to kill them and was testing them in order to do research. So, would you willingly follow someone like that? You know?
And they just had like one of their personalities are like one of their staff people like
absolutely try to destroy me. Yeah, yeah. It's so, especially that part. Using me as, like you said, using me as a test dummy for like research purposes. It's like, yeah, nah, that's not cool, bro.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I would follow them either. So, I mean, that's probably why. But yeah, the actual Vegapunk that's with Luffy reveals that his head grew with the amount of knowledge he has memorized. So it had to be cut out. And I really like this scene because Chopper and like Luffy is like, cut out? What do you mean, bro?
Yeah, Bonnie was like, don't say that shit like you just cut your hair. Like, don't do that.
Yeah. But apparently Vegapunk's storage, all his knowledge is in the top, is in the egg at the top of the Labo phase or whatever. I don't remember. I don't recall what that's actually called, the top of it. There's actually a name for that, but I have no idea what it's called. I can't remember.
The big egg. The big egg in the sky. Yeah, nah, I'm just messing with you, bro. I'm just messing with you.
But yeah, it's also revealed that the six clone Vegapunks are modeled for each attribute that Vegapunk requires for his like research in a team. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that to live, I guess. And once a day, basically all of the clones synchronize their memories to the big egg up at the top of the Labo phase or whatever. And basically gets uploaded to that, and then that becomes part of his memories. So What do you think about Vegapunk right now after you're learning all this? How his powers kind of work and why he's got all these clones going around?
He's a wild boy. It really sucks. Well, I thought one thing was cool. He was like, he was already a natural genius and then got a hold of the brain fruit.
Yeah.
That was a really cool and important distinction, because the brain fruit by itself doesn't make you smart. It just makes you able to memorize shit. Which I think, I mean, in the end also makes you kind of smart, because you can just like learn shit and like not forget it. But I think being able to take advantage of that knowledge, like he is already super damn smart. But having your brain grow every time you learn something fucking sucks, dude.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine how off balance that man was?
He said he was almost the height of a giant just with his head.
Yeah. Like, maybe that's why his tongue's out. Maybe that kept his balance, right? It's like a tail.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong.
But I do like how you mentioned that, you know, it was great to have a genius get that. It's kind of like what we was talking about, Undead Unluck, you know, the artifact pen or whatever, being gave to a mangaka. Because that mangaka, like Vegapunk, they have the determination and will to actually want to figure stuff out and like draw or whatever, right? And right. So if you were to give this to anybody, like, you know, what if they didn't want to, like, you know, learn all this stuff? But Vegapunk does. Like, that's what he lives for. He lives to experiment, he lives to research, he lives to learn. So
that's true. Yeah, like he was already a knowledge seeker. He's a genius. He was like seeking more knowledge, because like, yeah, if the brain fruit goes to somebody that like just wants to sit on the couch and eat Cheez-Its all the time, like, what a fucking waste, bro. You know,
I mean, imagine though, like, you could literally remember everything about anything you watch. Though, you could be like a super like Jeopardy genius, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or some shit. It'd be fun. You would never forget anything. You'd be like pulling up facts about One Piece like crazy, because Oda ain't gonna catch you out of off guard and stuff.
Yeah, Trebek would have had to kick you up the show for real. Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty interesting. We actually getting to learn about what's going on inside Vegapunk now. And after all that, Bonnie actually goes and tries to kill Vegapunk with the lightsaber thing, for turning Kuma into a heartless cyborg. And what reason do you think Kuma and Vegapunk had for making this change. We know there's a reason, so.
Yeah, there definitely is a reason. I can't remember why Kuma agreed to it, but I'm not really sure why Vegapunk would want to do that. Or if he did this on purpose, because it kind of seems like Bonnie says, like he's just a robot now, like he's a heartless robot. And I wonder if Vegapunk did that on purpose, was part of the deal. But I think Kuma was to protect someone, wasn't it? Can you remember why Kuma did it?
I think it had something to do with, which I'm not 100% sure, but I thought it had something to do with protecting Bonnie in some way, right?
But I thought so. It's something like that.
I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. I don't know. I forget when this was actually told. I think it's been a while, right?
Yes, it has. So, it has. As with everything in One Piece.
Yeah. So, but it is kind of strange, though, because with him turning into a heartless robot or whatever, like, he kind of becomes useless to Dragon as well. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, it had to be a really, really good reason for that in order to, like, I guess, betray Dragon plus, you know, Kuma to betray Dragon too, kind of, because he knew it was going to happen, right? So.
What if he didn't? You know, I don't know. I don't know. We're going to have to see, but it's going to be a while.
Yeah. So, a lot of questions going on right now about why or what the real reasons was and why Vegapunk did this and what Dragon's going to do. So, you know, we're in that moment where we're like kind of building up all these questions and like building up the tension or whatever. And eventually, hopefully soon, we're going to start to see all this climax. So
that is the idea, my friend.
Yeah. And to end this episode, we actually see Cypher, Poe, Aegis pulling up to Egghead Island. And they're fixing the old Lucci, man. He's getting ready to get him some Vegapunk real soon. So
yes, so that's gonna go crazy because you know Luffy and Lucci are about to go at it one more time, and that is gonna be exciting as fuck. And it's gonna be real exciting.
Yeah, and to like talking about Luffy and Lucci, like if y'all remember back in Water 7. That was actually one of my favorite fights of One Piece. Like Luffy went so hard, he barely got the job done. I mean, he didn't like 100% finish it, but he got the job done enough for him to do what they was trying to do with Robin. So,
right, bro. Yeah, right.
It's gonna be so interesting to see them clash again, because you know it's gonna happen.
So. Yeah, they wouldn't be like teasing us this hard and then not let us actually have it. That'd be fucked up.
Well, so in your mind, do you predict that Rob Lucci gets on the island and starts causing mayhem before 1100 or after 1100?
After 1100. Cause
I think so.
It's One Piece. This shit moves so fucking slow.
I think so too, honestly. I just had to see what you was thinking too. It's definitely after 1100. There ain't no way, right? So, yeah,
no, there's no fucking shot.
I mean, we haven't even seen the end of freaking freaking Law and Blackbeard. So that happened like 8 episodes ago.
Yeah, no, it might be another 200 before we see that shit. You know how this shit goes.
But yeah, that's it for One Piece. Unless you got something, Bass.
That's it for me, man. I'm good.
Alrighty. Well, that is it for our weekly rundown, episode 59. And we actually, for a DGEN episode, we're going to be talking about some of the shows that we'd love to see remade or like even like new seasons of it. Talk about some great shows that should be like done right, I guess you can say.
Yes, yeah, it's going to be pretty high.
So it should be a fun time. And I guess to end this episode, we want to say, make sure you rate this podcast on all your podcast platforms. Follow us on all the socials. We're on Threads, Twitter. The DGM videos are on YouTube as well.
Do all it that now. Stuff.
Yeah, do it. It really helps out a lot. Give us a rating. But yeah, we will see y'all on Thursday. Linktree.com/AnimeDGens.
Peace. Bye.